Fugitive. A QM production. Starring David Janssen as Dr. Richard Kimball, an innocent victim of blind justice, falsely convicted for the murder of his wife. Reprieved by fate when a train wreck freed him en route to the death house. Freed him to hide in lonely desperation, to change his identity, to toil at many jobs. Freed him to search for a one-armed man he saw leave the scene of the crime. Freed him to run before the relentless pursuit of the police lieutenant obsessed with his capture.
Hi, everybody. Talking Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby. That's a catchy name. I like that one, too. This is Dave White, who was given the honor of bringing the stars of the show on. And you can also be a star of the show by giving us a call tonight, 800-407-KSAV, 800-407-5728. If you want to email a question or a comment in during the program, email talk@ksav.org. Now, this is a special tonight. We had such response to The Fugitive when we did it on Talkin' Television with Dave White that we put on the special for tonight. And the guests are moderators of a Yahoo discussion group, Fugitive Views and Reviews. I got it right tonight. So, Kitty and Bobby, welcome to KSAV.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm doing fine. And it was brought to my attention by several people that I've been giving the wrong name of the group out in the past. So, Fugitive Views and Reviews.
Right. Well, actually, there's a "the" in front of it, but that's okay. The
Despite so much for rehearsals. Those of you that want to listen to the program, or if you have friends that want to listen, on the rebroadcast, this Thursday, tonight's program will be rebroadcast at 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 o'clock Eastern Time. So this gives people in the other time zones a chance to not have to be insomniacs to get to listen to the program. All right, to start things off, I've got some emails. First, this is from Stephen Chaplow, and he has some comments for you guys, but he indicates he's going to try to call in. So I will put his comments aside for the time being. What I do want to bring up is he has created a website. It's kind of a lengthy address, so what we did is this. We have put the website, a link up to it, on our KSAV homepage. Go to our sponsors and friends page. You'll see it says Fugitive Program. Click on that. It'll take you to the GeoCities website, and that was has been constructed, I guess is the right word, by one of your members. I've got a quick comment. This is from Leave in Oslo, Norway. I love it when we go international. She says, thanks, Dave, for making this program possible. She's a member of the Fugitive Views and Reviews. She says, I always enjoy the reviews. I look forward to more reviews and discussions as we are now approaching Season 3. She says, I'm very grateful I got a chance to watch the original series, and it is nice that people are still discussing it 40 years later. So thank you.
Now, let me just say one thing.
Sure.
She's not just a member of the group. She's also a co-moderator.
All right. She heads the European division.
yes, pretty much. Whereas I write reviews and do screen caps for all of the episodes, and Kitty writes her reviews. Lee posts pictures every day on our own page of the episode we're currently doing. And she's also responsible for the links, or rather the file section in our group, where everything we've written from the very beginning, and that was 2 years ago, is in there. And she's put it in a form that's easy to navigate. You can find anything in there, and she's responsible for that. And one more thing about her, she's listening live right now in Norway, where it's 4 minutes after 3 in the morning.
Hi, Leave.
Yeah, that, you know, I think that's amazing, because I'll tell you, Leave, I wouldn't get up at 4 in the morning to listen to me.
I wouldn't either.
No, we're in agreement. Listen, I've got an email question to start things off, but let me ask you guys, I've got a caller. Do you want to take the caller first?
Yeah, sure, you can put the caller through. Sure.
Okay. All right, we've got Ken from Vista, California.
Oh, you know Ken. Okay. Hi, Ken.
Ken, you're on KSAV. They can't wait. Go ahead.
Hey, Ken.
Hi, Dave.
Hi.
Hi, Ken. How you doing?
Thanks for letting me participate again. Hi, Bob. Hi, Kitty.
Hi.
Finally, somebody off the message board turns into a real person.
Yeah, it's been 2 years now, hasn't it?
It has.
And first thing I wanted to say is your group is excellent.
Thank you.
Bob and Kitty, your reviews are also very, very good.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
So I look at it every day and I read it. One of the first things I wanted to do is ask a real tough question. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
It's for both of you. I think the Fugitive series made a mistake by not having a pilot episode in the beginning. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
They just started right off with Fear in a Desert City. Kimball gets off a bus. We have the narrator talking for about 10 minutes, letting us know what's going on. And as a fan, when I first started watching the series, I got into the storylines. And, you know, Kimball on the run and all this. But I was always disappointed that they never had a pilot. And you know what I would have done? Act one, I would have opened up with the train scene. You know, you have Kimball and Gerard on the train.
Right.
They're talking to each other. They're handcuffed. Act two, I would have had the trial. Act three, I would have had the train wreck. And then in act four, I would have had Kimball on the run. I also would have introduced Gerard at that point, where he starts to get a little obsessed. He has to look for Kimball. And I would have gone from there with the pilot episode. Also in the pilot, I would have introduced Helen Kimball. I know you, Kitty, very concerned about her, and I am too. She was a mystery. All we saw was her on the floor. And we had to wait until the girl from Little Egypt to see some flashbacks. So I wanted to get both of your comments. Do you think?
Well, Ken, I support what you're saying here. There's only one thing. You've got a lot on the table there. That's more than an hour episode. You're not getting all that in 1 hour.
So should it have been two parts?
Well, I don't know. I've never heard of a pilot episode that's two parts. That would be news to me. The only thing I can say about it is I would have liked to have seen all of that. But it's hard to criticize something that works, because the fact of the matter is this series is very unconventional from day one all the way through for 4 years. They started out in an unconventional way, in which they actually started in the middle of the story by simply giving us a character we've never heard of, we have no idea who he is, and telling us right up front, listen to what we're telling you, he's innocent because we say he is. Now, I'm a natural born skeptic, so I don't know that he's innocent. How do I know that? Just because the narrator tells me that? So in that respect, I think you're right. It would have been nice to have seen it from the beginning and to form my own opinion about whether he's innocent. Instead, they're simply telling you that he is. All of those other issues about the trial and all of that, it's all true. And I'm sure that you've probably read the book, The Fugitive Recaptured, by Ed Robertson.
Yes.
And in there, he makes it very clear that they had no intention of telling the backstory until they put the series in previews before test audiences. And they demanded to know it. Other than that, they were perfectly content to simply start it right where they did and simply tell us what happened and go from there. And I'm not going to be too critical because, like I said, it did work. Nothing beats success like success. And it didn't seem to bother anybody, and it didn't really bother me until these days when I'm thinking more about it. But I like your idea a lot. I think it would have been very good, but I'm concerned about the time. That's a lot to get in one episode. Go ahead, Kitty.
Okay, thanks. I think it's very interesting what you said, because you said that you would have liked to have seen the train wreck and a little bit of the trial, and you would have liked to have seen Helen. And what I find interesting is that you're describing what happened in the first 11 minutes of the pilot in The Fugitive 2000.
Uh-huh.
And they actually did that. But for me, watching Fear in a Desert City, I like it. I think it's one of my favorite episodes. I mean, Brian Keith was such a menacing person in that episode, and you really got to see Richard Kimball as this, it was very well established that he was this person on the run, and while it would have been so easy for him to just kind of look the other way and try to make himself invisible, he took a chance and he got involved. And I thought that set the tone for the series, that you have this guy who's on the run, and he's, you know, and when most people who are on the run wouldn't get involved, he chooses to get involved. As far as telling the story, it doesn't bother me because the narrator tells you the story up front. And it seems to me, for me, there was never any skepticism. The first time I saw it and I saw the narration, it's like, okay, you know, obviously this is the premise of the series, so it doesn't really bother me.
Okay, I want to let you guys know you got two more callers waiting, so you pace yourselves however you want.
Oh, I'm watching the clock, okay. I just wanted to say the reason why that really works, in my opinion, why they get away with that, why they can start the story in the middle and not, and it doesn't bother anybody, is because of what happens at the end of the episode. Right near the end, Richard Kimball tells Monica Wells, the woman whose husband is abusing her, his story. And David Jansen has probably never been better in his entire life than he is in that scene. He even has tears in his eyes. He tells her the story. There's no flashbacks. There's no anything. He simply tells the story, plain as it was, about how this was a miscarriage of justice and how he didn't do it. And it's so compelling the way he tells it, then I think it really covers for the fact that we didn't actually see it on screen. By the time I get to the end of that, I'm pretty much... I mean, he sells the series right there, because it's very difficult to relate to a character you don't know about, especially when you haven't seen him do anything. But he sells it right there. He tells the story, and he's so sincere in it that it's almost impossible to not believe him.
Yeah, I agree, Bobby Nair, because... You've got to basically, he's confirming what the narrator told us.
Exactly.
It's like the narrator said this, and then he tells this story, and it's like, okay, I can believe this. How come the jury didn't believe him?
Exactly. let me just ask Ken one question before we move on.
Yeah.
And that is that, did that hurt the series for you? Did it bother you? Did it detract from the series, or you just got beyond that?
I first became a fan in 1966. I was about 12 years old. My mother was watching, I believe it was Tuesday night, it was on at 10 o'clock, and I had to go to bed. I was so frustrated. But I tell you what, I didn't get hooked until episode 4 and 5, Never Wave Goodbye.
Right.
I tell you everything you said about Fear in a Desert City is correct. That was a very good episode. I like the story. I like the way everything played out. I like, you know, Kimball's confession to... at the end of the episode. The only thing I didn't like about that episode at the end was when Gerard showed up in his overcoat and his ridiculous-looking hat. We really didn't get introduced to Gerard that much in that episode. And also, Helen Kimball is a complete mystery.
Well,
and
you
also
know,
the
Ken,
one-armed
it's interesting
man.
What you say about the hat and coat, because in Barry Morse's book, he said he hated that hat and coat.
Yeah.
And at the end of the filming of that episode, he took that hat and coat and he threw it behind a bush.
I agree.
And
that is awful.
You never saw Gerard wearing a hat and coat again for the rest of the series because he thought they looked stupid.
Don't leave something else out about that pilot episode, too. They did consider it a pilot episode. And that is the fact that it's got two movie stars in it as guest stars.
Yeah,
and
you're right.
Brian Keith and you know...
Yeah.
And
they were very good.
And Vera Miles.
And Vera Miles, right. And they were movie stars.
But you know what?
How is it to have a pilot episode with known actors in it? That's most unusual. You know, they had to pay a lot of money for that, I would imagine.
Right. But the way it got started, the series, was a little slow. The next episode was The Witch, which was awful, I thought. And then you had The Other Side of the Mountain, and we saw Gerard there, and we got introduced to him. But then Never Wave Goodbye really got it for me, and then from there on I was just hooked. So,
okay.
Anyways,
well, I agree with you. It would have been nice, but I can't be critical of something that was a huge success. They got away with it. I don't know that anybody would get away with it today, but they did then. It doesn't really bother me. I don't think about it a whole lot. It was a good story. Had it been a poor story, that might have been different. But the way it played out, it worked. I wouldn't personally have done it that way, but I don't have any real problem with it.
All right, last question for you, Bob, and then last for Kitty, and then I'll get off because I know there are others. Bob, you going to write a book?
Me?
Yes.
About what?
Well, you've got all these reviews you've got that you've done with Kitty. You've got all these members posting their opinions. You could write a 300-page book.
Well, let me ask you a question. If I write that book and I put everybody's opinions in there from the group,
not everybody,
it becomes a huge success and it makes $1 million. I have to share that with everybody.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, and then Kitty.
I don't know if I want to write that book then.
Kitty, the main question for you is, you're a big fan. If you could play one of the leading ladies up to the episodes we've done or any other episode, which leading lady would you replace yourself with?
Oh, my goodness.
That's a tough question, I know, Kitty, but you got to tell me.
What leading lady?
Which one would you want to be?
Oh, let's see. I guess I would have, I would, at this point in time, I think I'd choose Amy. Because she was this person who nobody would have thought that she could stand up to Gerard when you first see her. And then she ended up, she didn't take any guff off of him. And she stood up to him. And she really genuinely cared about Kimball. And
that's from the end,
you know,
of the
and I just think, you know, she, if things had been different, I think these, you know, these two were ready to go out on a date together before the unfortunate accident happened. In other circumstances, she just might have ended up being a new doctor's wife.
Yeah, she wasn't all that exciting, but she seemed quite sincere. They would have made a nice couple, I think, just living in the suburbs as a doctor.
Yeah, I mean, it was apparent that he liked her because he wanted to go to the theater with her.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll get off. I know there are others.
Thanks a lot, Ken. Appreciate you.
But I hope to talk to you again. And hey, Dave, thanks a lot, Dave.
Okay, all right, Ken, certainly. All right, what do you guys want to do next? You got two callers waiting. We got emails.
Maybe you should do some emails since I think you're coming up on a break soon.
All right. Well, one of them you kind of pretty well answered, but this was from Linda.
Right.
And Linda says, first of all, Dave, I'm so pleased you decided to have a special on The Fugitive. I've spent the last several years writing fan fiction episodes to bring The Fugitive 2000 version, which ended so abruptly in 2001, to a suitable conclusion. In honor of tonight's show, we are airing the conclusion of our season finale tonight.
And I might add that I have co-written those episodes with Linda.
All right. And her question, you've pretty well, I guess, answered this one. She said, we've had much comment on whether Fear in a Desert City was the appropriate episode to begin The Fugitive. Why or why not? You've pretty well discussed that one in detail. What could have been better? In what ways did episode one establish the character of Dr. Kimball for all future episodes? I think you pretty well covered it. Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I would just say about that, it establishes his character because in the very first episode, he comes to the aid of a woman who's being brutalized by her husband, and he puts himself in danger. And that's the first time he ever does it, and he continues to do it for all 4 years of the series. And so right away, we know that he's basically a very good man, because who would put themselves in that kind of jeopardy to save a perfect stranger? It's the first time, but it surely is not the last.
All right. Let's take then a first time out so we can bring the caller in afterwards.
Okay.
And this is, we don't have anything real special set up, just a little promo. This is one of my favorite radio stations, though, so you'll enjoy it. Let's take a quick time out. We will catch our breath and then be back to talk some more Fugitive with Kitty and Bobby on Sherrovision Radio.
There's a lot more to KSAV than just Tuesday night. From 6 a.m. through midnight, 7 days a week, it's Retro Radio. All the great music from the 40s,
unforgettable,
50s,
and
60s.
But it's only made
with old commercials and station identifications from years gone by. Old-time radio programs such as Jack Benny, Burns and Allen, Dragnet, and many more make the nostalgia complete. Set your computer at work to KSAV and let everyone enjoy the music and the memories of a different era as KSAV plays all the music of your life every day of your life.
Talking serious fugitive tonight. None of this trivial stuff like that other guy did. I don't even remember his name. If you want to be on the program, 800-407-KSAV, or you can email me. I should say email Bobby and Kitty at talk@KSAV.org. But also, you know, after the program or at any time, send me your comments or whatever. Know if this is something you like, something you would like to have more of in the future. I would remind the audience that after this program, 7 o'clock tonight Pacific time, is going to be a 30-minute version of Perfectly Frank. And this is a new program that we've got with the music of Frank Sinatra. And it also features more than just playing some music. It has some tidbits of information and gossip and history and so on. So I think that's something. Stay tuned for that and spend the whole evening here at KSAV. Okay, patiently waiting in the wings, we've got AJ from New Orleans. AJ, come on and talk some fugitive with us.
Yes, well, how are you? I want to thank you very much for having this program. I've been a big, big fan of Bobby's and Kitty's for the past couple of years. And it's great to hear their voices. I've never heard them before.
Hello, AJ. Kitty, do we know this guy?
Gee, I don't know. Hey, AJ, how's it going?
Hello. Boy, I don't know where to start. There's so many things I want to ask you guys. First, I'd like to give an observation. Some of the shows of The Fugitive were so incredibly thrilling, I thought I was watching an episode of Alfred Hitchcock.
Yes.
And then sometimes there'd be an episode that I wasn't sure if it was a takeoff on a show that could have been called Leave It to the Fugitive.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was inconsistent in that aspect, and I'd like to hear your comments on that.
I agree with that completely. We've commented on that many times. It's one of those rare series that really gets away with doing some really, really bad episodes by following it up by doing something that's not only classic within the realm of The Fugitive, but it's classic TV. It goes beyond that. And so the feeling that I got when I was watching, and I think anybody who's watching it the first time, if you're watching classic episodes and you get to something that doesn't look so classic or is boring you or seems completely out of sorts, you're not interested in it, you're not going to give up on the series because you know that somewhere down the line is something really incredible. And that's what keeps you in the series. I don't know whether that works today on TV, where audiences have so many choices that they can just leave if they get disinterested. But you're right, there are some of those episodes. I'm glad you mentioned Alfred Hitchcock, because the whole series is like a Hitchcock movie, because Hitchcock went back to that theme over and over and over again in all of his movies, which is an innocent man who has to prove that he didn't do it. I mean, he went to that time and time again. So this series plays right into that, and thrilling is a good word. I mean, we recently did the season 2 episode Escape into Black, which to me is about as thrilling as TV ever gets. I mean, I've seen that thing 100 times, and I'm still on the edge of my seat even though I know the dialogue. So I couldn't agree more. Go ahead, Kitty.
Oh, I definitely agree. There are some really great episodes, but by the same token, there's some pretty bad episodes. I think it's interesting how people will talk about all their favorite episodes, and you always hear the same ones, you know, Escape into Black, Search in a Windy City, Never Wave Goodbye. But we never hear too many lists of what we consider the bad episodes. I mean, like, for me, the all-time worst episode on that show, it's a toss-up between Detour on a Road to Nowhere and Where the Action Is, or as I like to say, isn't.
Yeah, those are two really dreadful episodes.
You know, also, in the news group, and even in Tonight Show, you've been discussing, like, what the series should have done, what they shouldn't have done. And I've always felt that when The Fugitive first aired, that the entire television genre was in its infancy. And I feel that there's an evolutionary process, and we learn by making mistakes as we learn by doing good things. And, you know, as a whole, I certainly feel that The Fugitive did more good things than bad things.
Well, I'll agree with that. I agree with that. But if you're saying that, you're saying then that they made mistakes along the way, but as they went along, it got better and better because they learned from their mistakes. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that all of television does that.
Oh.
I think,
really,
you know,
today,
just
why
the
TV
fact
so bad today?
that 50 plus
years behind it and it hasn't learned a thing. That's pretty shocking. I would think that it would be perfect today. But getting back to The Fugitive, if any of that is true, and I'm not saying it's not. But if any of that is true and they learn from their mistakes, why is season four so lousy? Because, you know, by the time they get there, they pretty much run out of ideas. And
well, maybe that was it. Maybe they just ran out of ideas, and maybe they should have folded the show earlier. But, you know, an example that I'd like to bring out is the trial scene. I mean, it's a joke. It looks like a comic book.
Absurd.
And I think if it was done today, that it would have been done with more realism, with more class.
Well, you can't run that by an audience today. Audiences today have Court TV on their cable system.
Right.
Audiences today sat through the O.J. Simpson trial. They know all about trials. In the trial and the girl from Little Egypt, it is so absolutely preposterous. It is laughable. You've got a prosecuting attorney who's talking to a woman, a neighbor of Kimball and his wife. And she's talking about how she heard them arguing. She saw her with a black eye one day. He asked her so many leading questions. I mean, it's a mistrial immediately.
And let's not forget that the defense attorney appears to be a deaf mute.
Yes. And the prosecuting attorney, if you go back and watch that episode carefully, he turns around, he rolls his eyes, and he looks over at the jury. Okay? And inside the jury box, the jurors are actually whispering to each other. Well, you know, how many mistrials do you have in one trial? I mean, it should have been thrown out immediately. It was absurd.
Well,
it doesn't make a bit of
sense. Listen, I don't want to occupy any more time. I know that Steve wants to get on. This has been a real thrill for me to hear the voices of two of my favorite people.
Well, that's obvious.
And,
well, thanks,
you know,
AJ.
Thanks, AJ.
I hope you get to go back to New Orleans one day.
All right. Well, actually, I'm going back Thursday.
Okay.
All right, folks. Take care.
Thanks a lot.
You too.
I've got an email came in. This is from R.C. from Westchester.
Okay.
And he or she, I guess. I got in trouble on my show last week.
I think that's a he.
Okay.
I
went on and on last week on my show about a physician. I got to correct it this week and what a hero he was and how he did that. I got an email. You know, it's Martha.
I heard that last week. That's a woman?
Yeah. So anyway, I've been
You're
learning
not
from my mistake.
Correct, Dave.
R.C. from Westchester says, was The Fugitive the first TV series to use a narrator, and don't you think the narrator lent some credibility to the character? It's almost as if we really believe this guy, Kimball, exists because of how the narrator takes compassion at times with him.
I agree. I don't know of any other series that had a narrator consistently from week to week. There may have been some that had one occasionally. Although I can't name it. I can't remember. I've been watching TV for longer than I'd like to admit, and I can't remember there ever being a narrator. I liked the idea of having a narrator, but it wasn't because I thought he lent credibility to the series, because he's just a narrator. I mean, I don't know that it's credible just because he says anything, but I rather like it. And of course, you know, you had William Conrad on there doing the narration, and he had that incredible voice, and I think it added a lot to the show. And as a matter of fact, as much as I like the 2000 version of the series, I found I really missed the narration. I really wanted it to be there, simply because I think it added a new dimension. At the beginning of every episode, he tells you what the situation is. He reminds you of it. And then at the end, it's kind of sad at the end of every episode, because it always ends the same way, with Kimball walking off into the darkness with nothing but hope and not very much of that. So, yeah, I think it was very important. It added a lot to the show for me.
Well, actually, Bob, I don't like the narrator as
much.
Yeah,
I know that, yeah. Yeah, you told me.
Maybe it's because I'm from a different generation. Yeah. I've actually found in some cases the narrator to be distracting. I remember the episode that started where Kimball has the reoccurring dream. Is that the one where he saves the kids?
You're talking about Nightmare at North Oak.
Nightmare at North Oak.
Right.
And that episode starts out where Kimball is running down the street and
right.
Gerard is chasing him, and Gerard pulls a gun on him, and all of a sudden you've got the narrator saying, the dream is always the same. And I'm like, oh, thank you very much, narrator. It's a dream.
You know what? In that respect, I agree with you. That's the one episode in which I think that they really missed the mark. They had the narrator come in too quickly.
Yeah, and there were other times where I thought the narrator just narrated too much. I was like ready to say, would you just shut up and let me listen to this show?
Right, that may be, that whole opening scene there may be my favorite moment in the entire series. I mean, it is, you know, AJ said thrilling, that's a thrilling scene. I was a teenager like a lot of people who are into this right now when it showed. And I can actually remember that beginning, that particular episode beginning, with Kimball walking down the street, Gerard behind him, and I didn't know what was going on. I thought they'd started an episode in the middle by mistake, because it just didn't make any sense. I mean, what is this doing happening right up front? And so it was absolutely incredible, and you really had to wonder what was going on when Kimball runs into to a dead end, and he's backed up against the wall, and Gerard is taking out his gun. We don't know Gerard is somebody who's out to kill Kimball. He's just out to capture him. And here he takes out his gun and he says, finally, you know, and it looks like he's going to shoot him. And you're right, just a few seconds before that moment, the narrator comes on to say, it's just a dream. That really, really kills the suspense at that moment. That is regrettable. But I wouldn't hold that against the entire series, though. That's only one incident. Remember, there are a few episodes in there, I don't know what the names of them are, in which the narrator comes on like in the middle and says something. But other than that, it's always just at the top and at the bottom. That's it. Other than that, you're on your own. So that's why it really didn't bother me, to tell you the truth. But I can understand probably some people like yourself don't really enjoy anybody. It's like having somebody read a book to you. You know, let me read the book myself. You don't have to tell me exactly what's happening, and you don't have to remind me at the beginning
Or it's like maybe like where you're watching a movie and someone's already seen the movie, so they're starting to tell you about the movie right before something's going to happen,
irritating.
And you just want to say, would you just shut up?
Right, very irritating. Just get on with the story. Yeah, but it didn't really bother me all that much, to tell you the truth. I got used to it right away.
Okay, we've got one more caller waiting.
Okay.
You want to take that?
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
All right. We've got patiently waiting out here. We've got Steve from Florida. Steve, welcome to KSAV and Talkin' Fugitive.
Hi, Steve.
Hey, how you doing?
Hello, Steve.
How you doing, Bob? How you doing, Kenny?
Pretty good.
Good. I kind of feel funny. I don't know what to say on the radio. I really have not been listening because my internet connection won't allow me to connect, so I don't know what the thread of conversation is. I just want to say that it's amazing that 40 years later we're still talking about this show. I think it's great.
Well, it is, and there are a lot of shows like that, because last week Dave on his talking television program, they were talking about Combat, which was a show that ran before The Fugitive on Tuesday nights. And
oh,
I didn't
sure,
think
I remember
anybody
that,
remembered
yeah.
it but me, and yet that's not quite the case. So it doesn't surprise
yeah, yeah,
me.
Combat, yeah, that takes me way back. But my dad used to watch that. But
right.
Yeah, but The Fugitive, because something about the show, I don't know if it's the music, the storyline, the interaction between Kimball and Gerard, but everything, it's just like, it still holds up after all these years. I still love it the same way I did when I was a kid. It's great.
Hey, Steve, are you the one who set up the GeoCities website?
Yes, that's me. As a
okay,
matter of fact.
I read that earlier. Since you aren't able to listen to the program, I announced that, and as a matter of fact, we put up a link to that on our homepage. You go to our sponsors and friends page, and there's a link to to...
did you really?
Yes, and that's easier than me trying to give it out. It's hard for people to write it down.
I was worried how I was going to sit there and rattle it all off. Well, I thank you for doing that. I also put a link to your radio station on my homepage.
Oh, I love it. That's great.
Bobby's Fugitive Yahoo group. And I never did a website before, so I'm just kind of like playing around and having fun and learning as I go along.
Well, I was going to say, if there's anything that you, wanted to talk about, you waited a long time to be on, if you want to talk about, setting up your site or what's there or whatever.
I'd like to give him a little plug if I can.
Sure.
I've been there, and it really is an excellent website. You never know that he didn't know what he was doing when he created it, but it really is very good, and he's got some very interesting things on there, not the least of which are some really unusual pictures of David Jansen in his early career. And those are pictures I've never seen.
Thank you, Bob. That says a lot coming from you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, they're very good. I was fascinated by it because I've been on all the websites and everywhere, and I've never really seen many of those pictures.
Do you have, Steve, a link up there? We do on our homepage to the petition to get Fugitive released on DVD.
No, I don't. I would like to put that up. What I do have, I stumbled across a website recently. I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but I have that link on my page. Supposedly, if you register, they will notify you instantly if and when the Fugitive is ever released on DVD. But yeah, if you can send that to me, Dave, I'd appreciate it. I'd definitely put that up on my homepage.
Okay, or you can, I will send it to you. It's also on our sponsors and friends page. You can go there and you can copy and paste it out of there. And incidentally,
that's fine. I'll do that. That's great. Yeah.
I will tell people that it stands at 248 signatures as of tonight.
Can't believe that this show is not released on DVD. I'm sure there's all kinds of legal and copyright reasons. I have no clue, but I mean it's a shame. I mean they have such crap coming out on DVDs these days, and I can't believe a great show like this just is not out yet.
Well, that's all one can do is to
Dave, can I say something here?
Of course.
Last week when I was listening to your show on your own program about combat, I noted that the people were calling in, and you had a lady on there. I don't remember her name. She runs the website for that show.
Oh, yeah, Joe Davidsmeyer.
Right, and I'd like people who are listening about Fugitive to know that she told a story on there about how, and you were talking to her about it, how at the very beginning they wanted it released on DVD, and the company that eventually did it was very reluctant to do that. They really believed there would be no audience for it at all. And they simply stayed with it until they convinced them to bring out, I think, the first season. And it took off like crazy, and they were so impressed with the sales that they've now put out all five seasons. Is that not true?
Yes, that's exactly what she said. And so, don't give up on things. This particular petition a fellow started back on our on the broadcast of our first talk in television, the first Fugitive show. So, people get frustrated and say, what can I do? Here's something you can do. Steve? Steve, thanks a lot for calling.
Okay, no problem. And thank you, Dave, for the plug. And you too, Bobby and
thanks
Kitty.
A lot,
and
Steve.
Keep
thanks
up the good work on your site there, Bob. I'm really happy to be part of it.
Thanks.
All right. Let's go take our second time out. I'll get organized. I had another email in. This is from Garrison and a couple others that came in advance. So let's take a quick time out, only about 1 minute, and then we'll come back for segment number three,
okay.
Act three, as we say, on Retro Radio.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dave White, your host of Talkin' Television with Dave White. Broadcast every Tuesday from 7:30 to 9 p.m. Pacific Time, right here on KSAV. Each week, television guru Tim Carmody and I discuss the programs, series, stars, and more that our audience wants to hear about. Expert guests, your phone calls and emails make this a fun 90 minutes of live programming. So schedule some time on Tuesday evenings to tune in to Talkin' Television with Dave White. We're working hard to put television on the radio.
All Bobby on KSAV if you want to join in the conversation. 800-407-KSAV, or you can email talk@ksav.org. At 7:30 Pacific time tonight is going to be Talking Television with Dave White. That guy is good, too. I'll tell you, I listen to him every week. He is really great, one of my favorites. Anyway, tonight it's going to be the programs of Michael Landon. Guest will be Kent McRae, who is Michael Landon's business partner and producer. All right, with The Fugitive, this is from Garrison. Garrison says, it's a common practice for producers to use an episode of an established show to create a pilot for a new show with the star or stars of the established show interacting with the characters who would be the stars of the new show. Are you a lawyer, Garrison? Were any of the episodes of The Fugitive backdoor pilots for such a series? It would seem the plot line with Kimball getting involved with a new set of people every week would be ideal for such a setup.
No.
None that I know of.
No, as far as I know, no, that was never done. That was never done. Many, many people return, many, many guest stars return as different characters, but there's only one instance in which they brought back an actual person, a character from before, and that is there's the season one two-part episode.
Wasn't it Eileen Heckert?
With Eileen Heckert, right, and she comes back in the last season in an episode that most people consider to be pretty bad. But I don't recall that ever being done in that series.
Do you think it would have been a good idea?
Just off the top of my head, when I think about building a series around a possible character from The Fugitive, the episode Search in a Windy City comes to mind, the character of what was his name, Mike Decker?
Mike Decker, yeah.
Yeah, played by Pat Hingle.
Right.
I thought he was a rather interesting character.
Yeah, because at the end of the episode, he's going to jail for warning Kimball that Gerard is about to arrest him.
Right.
And so it would have been interesting, I think, to bring him back later to see how that played out. When he got out of jail, was he a hero to the public for doing what he did? Did he lose his job? What happened? And instead, Pat Hingle comes back in a very regrettable episode.
Oh. Awful episode.
Nicest fellow he's ever wanted to meet. Yeah.
Okay.
Pretty brutal.
We've got another caller on the line. Do you want to take the call or you want another email?
No, we'll take the call.
You want the call? This is David from West Virginia. And David, welcome tonight to Talking Fugitive. Hi.
Hi, Dave. It's good to hear from you guys.
Oh,
hi,
yeah.
David.
Hi, Dave.
My question to the group is, did you guys happen to watch any of CBS's attempt at the remake in 1998? It failed, obviously, but what do you think got lost
It was actually in 2000 that it was on.
Well, 2000, but what do you think got lost in the remake that made the show unsuccessful?
Well, I've always been of the opinion that the remake kind of had a couple of things going against it. It had the original series, you know, you had the people who had watched the original series 40 years earlier that remembered that. But then you also had the younger generation who had seen the movie with Harrison Ford. And I personally didn't really care that much for the movie. I mean, the movie for me I thought was a very good whodunit. But let's face it, Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones could have had completely different names in that movie, and you still would have had the same movie. You know, it was a good whodunit, good action adventure. But to me, it wasn't really The Fugitive, because Richard Kimball was only running for like 2 weeks. And for me, the charm of the whole story of Richard Kimball is that
he ran for years.
Yeah, exactly. He went from week to week, and you got to see him interacting with people. And ironically, when that movie came out, I remember thinking, why are they putting this on the silver screen? This is a story that works better on television. And
The story took years to tell.
Exactly, exactly. And I think, in my opinion, the reason why the show on CBS, the reason why it went, why it failed, was because we've got people in our own group who who have basically said they never even turned on the Fugitive 2000 because they just didn't think that it could be as good. You know, and my personal opinion is that, you know, if something is good, why is it that you can't redo it? I mean, there's plenty of remakes out there. Hollywood does remakes. Shakespeare's plays have been done for centuries. I mean, if everybody had that attitude, Shakespeare's plays never would have gotten out of his era. But I think that so you had a lot of people that were really gauging it on the old series, and some people wouldn't even tune into it. But you also had that group of people who just loved that movie, and when they tuned in to The Fugitive, they wanted to see Tim Daly leaping off of dams every week. They wanted to see action
and
adventure every week.
The
pilot had a lot of action and adventure, but obviously you can't have a budget to have Tim Daly. You know, in the pilot of that, Tim Daly jumped off of a building. And, you know, but you can't have a budget where you're going to have Tim Daly jumping off of a building every single week. You know,
in other words, you've got to
bring it down to where he is, to where he's interacting with people, like in the old show. Well, that I think that when people who liked the old series and maybe didn't particularly like the movie when they saw the first episode didn't particularly care for that. But then you had the people who liked the movie, and then after the first couple of episodes, it kind of got more into what the old series was. They tuned out because you weren't getting the action and adventure every week.
Well, I'm going to take a little different view of this. I agree with everything that's been said. However, I think there's more behind it than that, and I'm going to blame TV today and the audiences today. I think that a steady diet of reality TV and very mediocre cop shows has dumbed down the audience so bad that they're not willing to sit anymore week after week after week for years to get interested and emotionally involved in one character. Look at what's on TV today. You don't have that. You've got things like CSI and Law and Order, and they're standalone stories. Every week they do a new story. The only people that continue from week to week are the investigators.
That's true.
And so there's no continuing story. People today, especially younger generation, does not understand what it's like to do that. Just tell me what's on TV tonight, let me watch it tonight, and let me move on. When you watch The Fugitive, from day one,
actually,
you made the emotional involvement. You had to stay, and you had to care.
Exactly. And the other thing, too, about The Fugitive 2000 that I think was a very, very big mistake was that they turned the Gerard character into a sleaze. And that, I think, alienated people. I remember my mother watched it from the very beginning, and I remember the first thing she said to me was that she just hated the way they were portraying Gerard.
All right, David, you certainly got an answer now, didn't you?
Yeah, very much.
Oh, all right.
Listen,
David, this program, now this is pretty good, but it's not nearly as good as getting to listen to me and Tim Carmody run our mouths endlessly, is it?
No.
I'm just putting you on the spot.
You can expect another phone call later.
Oh, excellent. Good. I'll talk to you in about an hour or whatever, huh?
All right, David.
Thanks a lot for calling. Let's go back to, let's see, Linda had other questions for you guys.
Okay.
Dave, before you read that, I'd like to say something, because I'm afraid we're going to run out of time.
Okay.
And we're not going to get to this. You know, Linda, as she mentioned a little while ago, Linda and Kitty have written stories that end the 2000 version of The Fugitive because it was left with a totally unsuitable ending or no ending at all. And many people were outraged over that. They took it upon themselves to write their own stories. They spent, I guess, a couple of years on this. And tonight they posted the final part of their two-part finale. So this is another time in which the running has stopped. And I would urge everybody to go to their website. I have not read the two-part finale yet. I did not have the time today, but I can say that I'm about as excited about seeing how Richard Kimball came out at the end as I was in 1967.
Well,
say a few words about what you and Linda have done?
Wait a minute. I wanted to give, is this the drrichardkimball.com? Is that the website?
No.
That's their own. This is their own. Kitty will tell you.
Okay.
Yeah. Initially, we did do some stories for that website, but we have done our own website. It's called Fugitive Final Season, and it's at www.geocities.com/Melissa_1949/. And we have about, I think it's 10 stories up that that wraps up the Fugitive 2000 series. And Linda did tell me that she was posting part two of our finale today.
All right.
I have not read it yet, but I don't doubt that it's going to be great because, like a lot of people, I was never happy with the finale of the original series.
Yeah, I'm not all that thrilled with the finale of the original series either.
If you don't like it, you know, you write your own. That's what you do.
Okay, you know, actually, Linda's second question, you've kind of addressed her. She says the 1960s version cannot be viewed outside of the context in which it was written. What elements of the TV show were successfully carried forward in the movie in 2000, which she said would be timeless, and which elements could not? Well, that was really David's question, was what was missing in the 2000s.
I think basically what was carried over is one basic thing, and that's the basic premise of the entire series. And that is the fact that a man who is well-respected in the community, who has a very well-respected career as a doctor, who lives in relative wealth, or close to it, we would assume, all of a sudden comes back to his house one evening, and his entire world is turned upside down. And now he's on the other side. He's out in the street. He has nothing. He has no money. He has no job. His wife is dead, and he's separated from what family he has left. It doesn't matter what year that is. That could be 1965 or 2065. That's always going to strike a chord with people because this is not science fiction. This is something that could really happen to you. It could happen to anybody. People have been wrongfully accused. Some of them have been executed. So that's a real story, and I think that carried over.
RC from Westchester says, do you think The Fugitive's popularity falls under the category of epic? And in an epic, the character is charged to go on a journey, encounters many pitfalls along the way that make him realize his own character and strength. So anyway, to both the comment on that, does it fall under the category of what this person calls epic?
I think so. Yeah, I think under that definition that he just gave, yeah, because it is a journey. I don't know that Richard Kimball finds out anything about himself. He seems pretty self-assured that he's really a decent man. He's, you know, he's quite incredible, as a matter of fact. Sometimes I feel he's too good to be realistic. But, you know, I mean, I wish I had a doctor like that today. But I would say that it is an epic journey, for sure, because of all the people he meets, and he changes so many lives. I mean, it's absolutely a miracle that this man changed so many lives. But and that's very compelling. He can change everybody's life. He meets people who are in a lot of trouble, some people who have even been accused of murder, and he manages to save them, but he cannot save himself. Go ahead, Kitty.
Oh, well, I can't disagree with anything that you've said. I agree. It's, you know, it's definitely an epic. There have been one or two in some of those bad episodes, there have been a couple of people where you wonder why Kimball even bothered.
Oh, sure.
But
that's him. You know, he's going to do it no matter what.
Yes.
He doesn't pass judgment on anybody. If he believes something has been done wrong, he's going to take care of it. He's not going to look at it and say, you know what, it's not worth putting my life on the line for this sleazebag. I'm just not going to do it. I'm just going to turn and walk away. I mean, he literally never did. It can be infuriating sometimes because if you really care about him and whether he's going to survive or not, you're screaming at the TV set, you know, get out of there. Don't be ridiculous. There's nothing in it for you.
Linda says that as much as I enjoyed the 2000 version, I thought its greatest weakness was that it distorted Gerard to the point that he had a personal reason to dislike Kimball, and he was willing to bend the law to bring him in, overlooking a conspiracy to commit murder, lying to people, blackmailing his own boss.
I agree.
Yeah.
And another big pitfall of Gerard was that they took 13 episodes to explain to us what the big trauma in Gerard's life was. And, I mean, I think by the time they finally told us, I don't think there were too many people in the audience left who cared.
Well, speaking for myself, I intensely disliked Gerard in the 2000s. Yeah, I liked the series a lot. I think it was full of potential. I would have loved to have seen where they were going later on with it. And I'm very sorry that it did not hang around. But as far as Gerard is concerned, nothing. Absolutely nothing for me there. he was, you know, he was totally hamstrung, and all through the episode, very often he was not allowed to leave his office. In the first series, Gerard could go running after Kimball anywhere at the drop of a hat, just because he decided he wanted to do it.
Right.
So I did not like Gerard in the series, and I must say, in spite of the fact that I'm a big Tommy Lee Jones fan, and I think he was well deserving of the Oscar he won in this movie, I did not like Gerard in the movie version either. There's only one for Gerard for me, and that's Barry Morse.
Yeah.
That's
well,
the
you know, and
a real feel for
him. And I think the reason why for Gerard in the movie is that. Is that Gerard in the movie? It's very interesting that they decided to bring Gerard in. Gerard comes in after the escape happens. Gerard is not one of the investigators
right.
who investigates the murder. So Gerard comes in, and Gerard has no personal stake in it. Kimball yells at him that he didn't kill his wife, and Gerard says, "I don't care. I mean, it's just his job to bring him in." And maybe they decided to do it that way because. The Gerard in the original series always said, well, the law found him guilty,
right.
so therefore I have to bring him in. But by the same token, in today's world, a cop just can't go running off after a fugitive. They'd get fired. And
well, you know,
I think,
you know, that's a great line in the movie. Everybody mentions it when he says, "I don't care,"
yeah.
but I don't like it. And I'll tell you why, because he's making it personal that way. I don't care whether he cares or not. Barry Morse, the Gerard in the original series, never said, "I don't care," when Kimball told him he was innocent. He simply said, "It's not up to me to even judge that. A jury has already decided that. Don't even come to me about that. Maybe I care. Maybe I'm crazy about you. Maybe I believe in you. It doesn't matter anymore. You're going to have to go back, and if you can get a new trial, great, and if not, you're going to have to take your chances."
And it doesn't
simple.
Matter how many times you save my life or my
yeah.
wife or my sons.
Let me say one other thing before we run out of time. And I absolutely hated that scene at the end of the movie where Gerard and Kimball are in the car right before it pulls away and the credits roll, and they're too buddy-buddy. I hate that. I think it is ridiculous. You cannot give me a movie or a series or anything and make me sit through it that many years and tell me at the end of it that they're going to be best friends, that there's no resentment. I live in the real world. I don't buy it. They may have had respect for each other, but they're smiling at each other, and I don't like that kind of ending. I didn't like it in the first series.
Well, in the first series, I think it was totally inappropriate because Gerard had been chasing Kimball all over the place, and they had this history together, whereas in the movie, you actually saw Gerard start to see the light, and in the end, he did tell Richard that he said, "I know you didn't kill your wife, you know, and I know about so-and-so who did this and who did that," and so So for me, that didn't bother me, but it does. You know, the ending in the first series, that does bother me because, you know, he should have punched Gerard's lights out.
Well, I mean, maybe they were just, you know, kind of sitting around, you know, "Oh, well, you're going back, you know, to Fry. Hey, remember that time in Phoenix? Oh yeah, you know, you little SOB. I almost had her nailed down there." We're going to chuckle and chortle. That would have been real world, wouldn't it, Bum?
Yes, and I can't imagine. Yeah, and you know what? I also wanted to know, of course, the series ended, obviously, but I wanted to know what happened to Gerard after it was all over. We see what happens with the public today, you know, when somebody goes wrong, how they hang them on it immediately. Here's a man who chased a man around the country and completely ruined his career for all that many years. At the end, we find out he was wrong all along. Where does Gerard go? Does he just go back to work? Does anybody question?
I think they took away
his door and want to know why he did what he did.
They took away his hat and coat.
Well, that was a good thing.
Yeah, that's.
They should have taken it away at the beginning.
That's what I understood.
All right.
Well, I think you did beautifully. That's the end of the program. We got everything in and everybody on, at least for tonight's episode. Kitty, Bobby, thank you very much for coming on and making the first KSAV special here on The Fugitive
right.
a success.
Thanks very much, Dave. We only missed out on about 95% of what we wanted to talk about.
All right. Now, both of you stay on the line for a minute, because when we get off here, I want to talk to you quickly.
Okay.
For the rest of you, you stay where you are, too. Perfectly Frank is coming up, and in 30 minutes, it'll be Talking Television with Dave White. Oh, I'm going to be here for that. That guy is good. So I'll see all of you, hopefully, 30 minutes from now on Sharevision Radio.